This week's This Life with Dr. Bob Forrest is courtesy of Bergamot Sport, an all-natural athletic performance-enhancing and muscle recovery supplement with the usual multiple cardiovascular benefits associated with the polyphenols in the Bergamot products. Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather around your iPhone because it's another episode of This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob Forrest and our special guest, our favorite counselor in America, Shelley Spike.
Which is true.
Hi,
that's how you were first introduced to me.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, he was like, Bob was like,
I feel good about myself.
He goes, I got this woman. I've got this gal. She is really good.
She wanted supervision because she was going to be a child psychologist.
Oh, yeah. Boy. You got off that train.
How depressing is that occupation?
Oh, my.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, you think addicts are bad.
But you're ending up with a bunch of sort of adolescent young adults anyway, right?
Oh.
Just tell us where you work. You work at Bel Air Recovery now. It's an outpatient program.
Yeah, Bel Air Treatment, IOP, intensive outpatients.
82 clients.
That's 82 clients.
Phenomenal. That's
five
crazy.
Days a week, 3 days a week, 2 days a week. They all don't show up at the same time, thank goodness.
Right. Well, I showed up there one time and there was a cooking class. And I was like, that's how primal 22-year-old people are. They need to have a cooking class.
Well, you know, they need to learn
how to boil water.
Bob and I were talking to Steven Adler, one of the last episodes.
Oh, yeah.
And he's doing phenomenally well.
Really?
And he was making the point that, you know, you should be like a baby learning how to walk. Just the very basics. And your brain's got to wake up. You shouldn't be. He was talking about how difficult it was to read the big book because it was a gigantic challenge for him and the condition he was in.
It's a gigantic challenge, period.
So cooking and writing checks and getting through, you know, bus schedules, things like that.
Yeah, we call that life skills.
Life skills.
Yes,
that's right.
We call it
and
life
we
skills.
We leave that out very often.
Yes.
You guys are big on that.
No, we do life skills because our, you know, we have 21-year-olds, most average age 21.
Average age 21, Drew. Don't you want back in the business? Come on, Drew.
Maybe not Shelley's place.
That's what it is across the board.
What we need you to do, Drew.
Yeah.
Is we need to come in. You need to talk to some MFTs and some clinical social
Please
workers.
Please don't even. I'm trying to deal with my profession.
No.
Are you kidding me?
Oh.
It's the same thing.
It's very hard.
Yes.
It's very hard. It tries my patience.
And fundamentally, Shelley, I've distilled the fundamental, and I'm going to bring in our other guest, Bullet, in just a second here, because he'll love to hear this part of the story, or this point I'm going to make. When I really get down to it, the fundamental mistake that every clinician I know makes is they believe the goddamn patient.
I know.
That's the fundamental mistake.
They listen
to them and believe them. And it's one thing to listen and attune to them, but to believe what they're saying and to have expectation that what they're saying they're going to follow through on, even when they intend it, you've got to be effing kidding me. Bullet, am I right on this?
Believe them? And not in this lifetime, no, but absolutely listen to them.
Oh, yeah, listen deeply.
I agree wholeheartedly.
But Bullet has a one-man show. What's the date on that show, Bullet?
Next show is Saturday, March 18th at 4 p.m. At the Flight Theater in Hollywood.
It is. You will.
What kind of show?
I'm going to have him tell it in a second, but you particularly.
I got to go.
I was there last weekend or a couple weekends ago. It was, so thrilling to see. But Bullet essentially tells his story. And Bullet, give us like a 3-minute little summary of your life that they can get in great detail in this one-man show.
Okay. Well, born and raised in New York City. Parents split, divorced, broke up. My father brought me out to Hollywood, California with a promise of an exciting, prosperous life. Wound up going to LeConte Junior High School, which was a gang infested.
These are Shelley's people. These are Shelley's people. That gang you used to hang with at LeConte.
LeConte Junior High.
That was Shelley's peeps, or still is.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you know about the Clantones and all of them, C-14 at LeConte. But anyway, so I was getting picked on. I stood up to this guy named Borrego, who was
Cyclops,
who had one eye in the middle of his head. I had this big fight with him at the handball court, and I held my own, and those guys got to be my friends. Pops wasn't too thrilled about it. Make a long story short, went through a lot of different things until I landed playing basketball at a small school here in Los Angeles, became a well-known star, leading scorer in the state, a lot of college scholarships, but down the street from my school in West Los Angeles, there was another park with another gang called the Playboy Gangsters. That's where I got introduced to smoking weed, drinking. And to make a long story short, the one-man show chronicles my journey from New York City, the breakup, to becoming addicted to rock cocaine, to losing my college scholarships, to, you know, mental institutions, to, like they say, jails, institutions, living in a gas station bathroom, where, you know, that's ironically where I found God, and wandered upon a 12-step meeting, and then my journey into recovery and finding my own niche in recovery as an extreme interventionist slash the extractor. I chronicle my journey by acting out all the different characters in my life, and there's music and there's poetry and, you know, visuals, and it's just my way of trying to connect with people in recovery, and also raising awareness for our nonprofit organization, which I've been involved with for 23 years,
and that
is called TAPS.
TAPS.
TAPS14.org, which basically is the only nonprofit organization in the world that goes out into the streets and extracts kids in jeopardy from life, you know.
He goes into, Bob Shelley, like, full on, like the gang, like MS-13 type situations,
yeah.
And risks his life and his team's life. And we're going to put this on TV. I'm going to have them, mm-hmm. and their lives are fascinating too. The four of them,
wow,
that are the main extractors, and they're all recovering guys, and they're all deep in the game. And
in Venice,
great.
Culver City.
Yeah.
You're from
Culver City, yep.
But the. The bathroom you're describing was in Venice, I'm assuming.
Hollywood.
Oh, the bathroom was actually in Hollywood on Sunset
really?
And Las Palmas. It was very beautiful Shell
Palmas.
Station. No, it actually
absolutely.
Wasn't. But it was a Shell station. And I commandeered it back in the fall of 1987. And I don't know if it was because the guy actually felt sorry for me or he was scared of me or a combination of both. But I actually think the guy that ran it cared about me because occasionally he would slip under the door or Three Musketeers bar or Snickers bar like I was a rat in a cage.
And it pissed him off because it wasn't cocaine.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Bob, do you know this bathroom?
I know that area very well. I lived in the International Motel across the street there.
Right.
That was my spot.
Oh, lovely. Yeah.
Maybe bought drugs from you.
Did you know Pops that used to live in that weird cul-de-sac apartment building that's now behind the Rite Aid right there at Sunset in Las Palmas? There was a drug dealer
I'm sorry,
named...
He's thinking.
Who?
His name was Pops. Old black guy named Pops.
Off the top of my head, I knew a guy named Pirate who didn't have a ship.
Sure.
I knew a guy named Folks. I'm trying to think of some of. Disco.
As a friend of mine,
Pops.
As I read an article, a recovered gang guy that was working with gangs said he said I've met all the seven dwarfs. Every single one of them.
Did you know Chewy?
Chewy is a big one. The BART clinic on Cahuenga and Hollywood Boulevard, that was my spot.
6 a.m.
But remember,
Bullet was
meth and or speed, cocaine, I'm sorry, and pot
like
and alcohol.
I like speed.
But listen, but he was...
We did plenty of crack.
No, but he was way in and was paranoid and was not really getting out of the bathroom very much.
I lived at Hollywood in Las Palmas,
yeah,
above the pizza parlor, yeah. Same era.
Pink dot. Yeah.
Right.
It was a little early for me.
What happened was on a particular night, it was October 26, 1987, after veiled suicide attempts and wanting to die, I wandered into traffic trying to get hit by a car unsuccessfully.
Yeah, that won't
and
work.
I remember that there was a church up on the corner of Hollywood
and
Gardner.
Oh, Gardner. Oh, yeah. Oh, that
uh-huh.
one. Yeah.
I've actually spoken at that church before.
Yeah. This is where you got this where you found
it. Yeah, and I thought if I'm going to get close to God... and ask him to help me because he's not letting me die, I'm going to go there. And lo and behold, on the night of October 26, 1987, there was a Narcotics Anonymous meeting going on at that church, and some guy named John Finger, obviously I never forgot a name like that, put out his hand and said, "Why don't you come on in, brother?" And I did, and that was the last time I ever got high, because just, you know, the magnitude of having the opportunity to be led to that church and it being an NA meeting after all that I had been through and put others through, it was just too powerful for me to ever turn back. And, you know, I'm coming up on 30 years clean.
Oh, my God, that's so crazy. That's fantastic.
Yep. That is fantastic.
That is it.
Well, Bullet, I just wanted to give you a chance to promote your show and tell your story. It's fantastic, and you know what I think of you and what you guys are doing there at TAPS. And maybe people, if they're interested, check out the website or contribute to what these guys are doing. And stay tuned. Bullet and his team, I feel confident, are going to be on TV one of these days. So,
cool.
All right, Bullet, thanks for joining us.
All right, thank you very much. Nice to meet you guys.
All right, you guys, we'll talk soon.
Be well. Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a little break. Be right back. You know, I'm always happy to talk to you about our friends at Bergamot. They're the makers of a variety of supplements that use the extract from the bergamot citrus fruit, those polyphenols. That fruit is in Italy. These supplements act as a natural statin that may improve a number of cardiovascular conditions, as well as symptoms of the metabolic syndrome, which includes high blood pressure, high cholesterol, high blood sugar. As you know, I've been excited about the natural treatment since I first heard about it. I'm getting behind it. The science behind it is sound, and physicians throughout the world and cardiologists are actually using it. Now, the makers that brought you the formulation Bergamot NA, Bergamot Pro Plus, now bringing you Bergamot Sport. It provides all the same cardiovascular benefits, but has additional additives designed to aid athletes and those with a very, very active lifestyle. Bergamot Sport may help improve stamina and reduce recovery time and reduce muscle inflammation. Now, I've been taking Bergamot myself, and I suggest you talk to your physician to see if Bergamot Sport is right for you. And for a limited time, our listeners can save 10% on their order by entering the code Dr. Drew, D-R-D-R-E-W, at checkout. Again, that is D-R-D-R-E-W, all one word, at checkout, and you save 10% on your order of Bergamot. To order the Bergamot Sport for yourself, visit bergamot.com, Bergamot N-A, Bergamot, B-E-R-G-A-M-E-T.com, or click on the Bergamot banner on drdrew.com. Now, a couple of months ago, I was in my medical office, and I noticed some samples of a rehydration solution called Hydrolite. Just so happens I was about to undergo a colonoscopy, a routine medical procedure, and I was going to get dehydrated if I didn't be careful. And I thought, well, this stuff will be perfect. It's exactly what I need. I was absolutely impressed. The results were precisely what I was looking for. And not only did that rehydration solution get me through the procedure without becoming dehydrated, they have another product, these fizzy tablets that give you the same rehydration solution just in a little portable tablet. You just obviously add it to water. And that was something I always wanted to invent. I did not understand why we did not have an oral solution that you could hold in your pocket in the form of a tablet that would help us, say you had some vomiting or some other GI distress. It seemed perfectly sensible to me that you could put a little fizzy tablet in and have the rehydrating solution right there in your hand. And they created this. That's why I'm excited about Hydrolite, and we're welcoming them to the family. It's rapid, effective recovery from dehydration, requires a proper balance of sodium, glucose, and water. So if you're sick, you've been vomiting, or maybe heavy perspiration, even from exercise, water does not cut it. You need what's called fluid. Sports drinks are far less effective and are not balanced for the rehydration, for maintaining your body volume. Simply, Hydrolite's formulation is based on established science. It is the best rehydration product I've seen or tried. They dominate in other countries, and they're no doubt going to dominate here. You won't need IVs. If you're tolerating orals, you can use Hydrolite. Comes in flavors, orange, berry, lemonade, available, as I said, in that pre-mixed drink or a powder or the effervescence tablets that I was mentioning before. Simply drop it into a glass or a bottle of water and boom. Compared to sports drinks, Hydrolite delivers up to 4 times the electrolytes with 75% less sugar. That's what you need. You need volume quickly. Hydrolite solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-follow dosing instructions. You can find Hydrolite at Rite Aid or online at Amazon. And for more information, visit Hydrolite.com. That is H-Y-D-R-A-L-Y-T-E, Hydrolite.com. We're back, and I want to thank our friends at Bergamot for being a supportive sponsor. I do check
for
out
sure.
And also Hydrolite, the new guys. I sought these guys out because I thought the product was – I had intended to invent their product, and they got in there, and it's exactly what I had envisioned.
What did you do? Really email worked. Them, and they emailed
no,
you
No, they
back?
Had – the samples were in my medical office. There were samples
oh,
there.
Okay.
And I started using it because I was having a colonoscopy right about that time, and it was like this just prevented me from getting dehydrated. It was perfect.
Awesome.
But what I'm jealous of is they invented these little fizzy tablets you put in a glass of water, and it's you know you get the Hydrolite solution just in a tablet, and I always thought that and it tastes good. It's fizzy.
Oh, you wish you invented it?
I intended to invent it. I knew it'd be a great product. You understand? I conceived of this. It was
too busy saving people's lives. Wow. Sorry.
All right, and also. Go to doctor.com. Just check out the family of podcasts there. We appreciate that. So, Bob, you were telling a story during the break about how you broke your back, which I didn't know.
Yeah, no. You did. Well, no, why do you think I'm in pain all the time?
I know you have back issues. I didn't know you broke your back.
So it started at Los Encinas 10, 15 years ago now, 14 years ago now. But he and I ache. And then we listen to, a couple years later.
Sure.
Yeah. And these people are telling us how much they ache. And Drew said to me one day, they're not even in as much pain as I am.
Not even close. Yeah.
And that's when we had this bond over pain, that we live with pain. We're tough. Our dads were tough. You know what I mean?
But what did you do to break your
I was playing a concert there right on Santa Monica Boulevard. There used to be a club there called the Lassa Club.
Yeah.
And I looked out from the curtain behind, and I saw, because the dressing room was behind the stage, and I saw there was quite a few people there. Thelonious Monster was getting popular, and I thought, because they used to always start playing without me, and then I'd come out. So I thought, I'm going to come out, I'm going to do a somersault, jump, and land on the people, because there was quite more people than I thought
like
would be
somersault
there.
Off the stage?
Yeah, jump off the stage and land
flip,
on them.
Flip off the stage.
Flip forward.
A somersault means you're on the ground. A flip means you jump off the ground.
Yeah, I was going to jump on the monitor, which I did. I wasn't too drunk. I timed
Hit
it. You jump
monitor.
On the monitor. Gives
up
you some lift.
Over.
You spin over and land on them, and it's just like in a rock video.
Yes.
Except for they just spread out, and I landed right on my back.
They saw this maniac flipping on him at full speed.
Guy coming, I'm out of the way.
Yeah.
You know, I was not a true punk rocker, neither was Shelley, if she tells you. The only other time I stage dove was at a benefit concert at the Avalon Theater, what it's called Avalon now, but it used to call the Palace. So it was me, John Cusack, and Fleer standing on the side of the stage.
Oops, she dropped something.
Huh?
A name.
And no, I'm telling you, it's true.
Yeah.
That's who it was true.
And Jane's Addiction was playing.
Yeah.
And so there's three monitors out in front of them. So we all said, okay, pick a monitor. And I picked the front one, the middle one, Flea on the left, John on the right. And we used the monitors to jump out and stage crowd dive, right? I'm in the air. Now, I'm not doing a somersault. I'm just got feet down, coming down. Oh. And everyone's putting their hands up, you know. But one guy's not. And the guy landed on both feet on his shoulders, and I could hear his head hit the ground of the thing. He was blind.
Oh, my God.
You hit a blind. You landed
so the
on
two
a,
times I've ever staged it, I broke my back and I landed on
a blind
guy.
Didn't Jim Morrison sort of invent that phenomenon? And he sort of fell into the audience.
Yeah, he was kind of falling.
Okay,
yeah.
Listen. You cannot do that ever again.
I've never have since that blind thing.
Don't you
worry.
That blind
bad
thing,
omens.
The blind thing was more traumatizing than the breaking my back. Yeah.
Don't you worry about him doing that.
You're not doing
happen.
That.
Now that I've
again.
Had stem cells, I feel like stage diving.
Well, I'm really light, so I could jump off the stage
and land
and I could
on two
land
people.
On
two
people
could hold her up.
Just roll off their shoulders.
Yeah, even
a
blind
I'm
guy
just
could
fine.
Deal with Shelley.
But you coming down.
But talk to us about.
I know what he wants to get to the 82 clients.
No,
how do you deal with it?
No, not just that. That's part of what I want to get to. I want to get to what you've learned about young adults through dealing with so many of them.
Okay.
And today, the millennials, so-called.
Okay, so I'm super in over my head, okay? I'm some kind of, I'm director, program director.
Of course
directing,
you are.
Directing and facilitating all kinds of supervision.
And because it's you,
and,
I would strongly urge people to go there. I would recommend
Louisa's doing that at Refuge, too, right?
Yep.
See, that's what you do. We were talking about in the prior podcast about... He taught me, then we learned together, then you run programs, I run programs. That's built into your philosophy, what you were trying to talk to that Tom guy about.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
How come it's not built into more businesses to teach people?
Pass it on because people see that as competition. I think, or they want to own you as you go out in the world, or you know, exploit you or whatever.
They think that you owe them
rather than just letting people go flourish.
Yeah,
yeah, and that's it's kind of capitalism, I guess. Sad.
But I think, you got
I think when you apply that kind of bullshit to clinical situations, everybody is ill-served.
Yes.
Because
yes,
this is
absolutely.
A human. This is a calling. You have to be fully engaged in, you know, and free and autonomous in what you're doing, because people are at stake. And if you're working for me or something, or there's any resentment or whatever,
or money,
you're not going to be.
Well, it's a fine. It's a lot of balancing, and so what I notice with young adults is that they have very poor insight and poor judgment. And
what do they want? Males mostly.
What motivates them? What do they want? I can't figure it out yet.
This is what they want. They don't want to be sick anymore. They want a better life, but they don't want to do anything to get it.
Okay, well, that's lack of motivation.
Right?
Yeah.
Or they can't do anything
to get
it. Maybe they want to, but they can't because their brains are not fully formed, number one. Number two, they have been using some kind of substance for, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years. And then they have been basically sent to us.
No life experience also, right?
No life experience and no real ability to function in a societal way. And they dump them right in the middle of West Los Angeles.
Or Malibu.
But the phenomenal thing about these kids is that they're very, you know, they're very resilient too. Mm-hmm. Because obviously they're young. Their cells are just dividing and they're just having a great experience in life, but they're destroying themselves. So we really have to work from a perspective of pre-contemplative, which in the stages of change, you know, that pre-contemplative doesn't really work out long term.
No.
You know, this is a very short term.
And getting people from pre-contemplative to contemplative is not that easy.
Well,
do they even have
impossible.
The fundamentals? Yeah. My question is, do they even have the fundamentals to walk across that bridge? I'll give you an example. I started noticing about a year ago, when I say I don't give a fuck about you to them, they perk up. Mm-hmm. It's as if no one's ever said that to them. How about that, Drew?
Well,
that's
I'm
interesting.
Sure no one really has.
That's interesting. Well, it's your new treatment
style. Well, isn't
style.
That?
new treatment intervention.
Well, no, I pause and then I say, you should care about your life, not me, not your mom. You should. It's your life. Mm-hmm. And it's as if a light bulb's gone on in a lot of their heads. And they're like, you're right. Like, no one's ever talked to me like that.
That's interesting.
Right?
Is that
what is that?
Shelly?
What is that?
Oh, I
thing?
Can't do that.
Why?
Yeah, she's.
I'm a clinical director.
You're the director,
I can't do shit like. I don't know how Bob gets away with it. I mean, I gotta say, I have no idea how you get through when you say things like that. I would have the. I mean, I can't even.
He follows
tell
it
you.
On. He, fo-
they,
he
they,
follows.
They would
it.
Literally probably run me out of the building. The MFTs, the LCSWs.
I'm only there once a week.
They would run me out of the building.
You were complaining about the other clinicians. Is it other than them believing the patients? What else are they?
Well, there's this dynamic that's begun that everything is about a secondary underlying issue.
Oh, boy.
And so the underlying issues,
That's always been
We go in with the underlying issues without treating the main component, which
is the addiction.
We have to treat the
addiction. As we were saying with Steve the other day, Steven was like, look, I couldn't do anything. What good does it do to work on underlying issues?
Psychodynamics doesn't work on addiction. Psychotherapy doesn't
work later,
on addiction.
Well, later it helps people.
Of course.
Yeah, but not...
Absolutely. But we can't go in and start digging through, you know, their past when they don't have any coping skills to even brush their teeth in the morning.
Right.
You know, they're not ready for therapy.
Right.
They're ready for cognitive, behavioral, structural
changes. Here's an interesting
thing.
I notice that because I have a sober living of some of them too. You have to remind them to take a shower, right? So the MFT world, the psych world, will see that as a sign and symptom of some deeper
depression.
No, autism, you know, spectrum, whatever. I just think no one's ever told them, like, fucking take a shower. You know what I mean?
Possibly. But, you know, it's
have you
such
noticed
a
bathing being an issue with some of the boys?
Oh, that's there's
I,
a whole
I have
there's
noticed.
A whole hipster ethos.
You What's that?
I
what hipster ethos
week.
Is that?
You only bathe once a week,
and you smell
week.
All week long.
I don't know what they do, but I know they're not bathing normally.
Well,
So anyways,
that the man tells them to do that.
So I think what they do well there is get them up and going, and it's long term, and that.
How do you retain them?
Well, I wish it was long term, yeah. But
well, the
you
one
know,
Paul's
don't get me
the
started.
Ones Paul picks don't are long term.
Sure, but don't get me started on Blue Shield of California right now.
Oh yeah,
don't get me started.
They don't pay. I know that
they never did.
Unbelievable.
They send you an $80 check when they owe you $14,000. Drew,
it is
when they would routinely just go no. Yeah.
No, we're sorry.
Yeah,
we authorized that. We authorized that.
So understand. Understand that before you got in, when you were being a mom, stay-at-home mom.
Yes.
We were dealing with this, and what I noticed was they're doing it right now. When they were doing it in 2004, 2005, 2006, it was to get rid of inpatient treatment. They're doing it right now to get rid of residential treatment.
They've already gotten rid of residential.
Squeezing it.
Yeah, squeezing it.
It's PHP.
Yeah.
Detox and PHP.
Yeah.
And residential and IOP.
They're not paying for residential, though.
Right.
No, I'm saying
you pay for that yourself.
You're getting. We have to give residential services at the IOP.
Oh,
level
higher
of
levels
care.
Of services for the lower level of
you weren't around
compensation.
When the days when Bob and I were dealing with this,
we were getting $580 a day for a hospital.
But not only that, we were having to give hospital services for
even more services.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the residential.
That's what she's saying going on now. They're giving
routinely.
Residential level of care and getting IOP.
This is the game. It's been going on for years.
But so I thought they were trying to get rid of residential treatment.
They have gotten rid of residential, and now we have people who have 2 or 3 days of sobriety.
They're really
post-acute withdrawal symptoms all over the place.
In sober living.
And they're in sober living, and they have, a car, or they have, a credit card. They can't. Like, we're setting them up to fail at that level of care. I have a detox. I can't even get detox. I have to get PHP, partial hospitalization.
For detox.
For detox. And so it's a whole issue of
so
of
maybe
just,
it's not the kids. Maybe it's just not enough care.
You
know what I mean?
Definitely not enough care.
I've always felt there's not enough care, but I sort of gave up that battle.
But now the kids have bought into it. Now they don't even want to stay in detox. Now they look at detox as a 3-day.
You're feeling all my misery as a program director. It's because that's all the stuff I dealt with all the time.
Well, I feel good about that.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, you should.
I feel good about that.
You're stepping up the ladder.
Yeah, I've arrived somewhere.
You've gone up 10 rungs on the ladder.
I really have.
What's ironic to me, though, is as we're squeezing out all these other sort of lower levels of care, the same care has emerged in these residential programs that cost a fortune. And so how is that? That you can't get any coverage for modest care, and yet people are still piling into these pieces
really,
of crap
really,
that are super
really
expensive. It's very weird. I think
nonprofit.
Is the way to go.
I'm thinking nonprofit at this point.
Like Claire, Claire Foundation.
But Claire's gone for profit too. There's everybody's. We're in a flux as an industry. We're in a changing time right now. And what was correct is, I think it was Steven said, nobody's got a worse reputation than the recovery industry because, children are going to rehabs. What the parents or loved ones of the kid thinks in high quality care and whatever, and they're dying. So then that reflects on the quality of care. I remember when Drew and I, when we were walking up to the main hospital and we were going to get more budget cuts, and you just said, if we just had higher success rates, we wouldn't be able to just have to – remember?
No. Tell
because
me what I said.
We were we were going up for a big meeting where we were going to be – a nurse was going to be cut. We weren't going to have the med nurse or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And you just turned to me and you said, if we just had a higher success rates, we'd have a leg to stand on to argue with Jim.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Because everyone was relapsing and the whole thing was kind of coming unglued at that point.
Huh.
Right? When we were low census, like 7 or 8 people at inpatient treatment.
Oh,
and they kept cutting budget.
Well, yeah, we had low census.
And we have low census and low success rate, and the insurance didn't want to readmit them when they're the ones that kicked them out and wouldn't let them stay with us.
Right. That was
you know what I mean?
I do remember that.
Yeah.
And that's what you're dealing with right now.
And see, we've gotten into the podcast industry, so we're not in that industry anymore.
You guys are a tiny bit smarter than me.
A Well, someday you're going to have your own podcast, Shelley.
Someday after I have no mind left because I've lost it, I'm going to do podcasts about how I'm going to be one of those raving lunatics like Bob.
Are we on Facebook Live? Is that what's happening? My wife is over there with a camera.
Videotaping a camera.
Do we need to take a break?
They do.
How are we doing here? All right, we'll take a little break and be right back. Well, this week's This Life is brought to you courtesy of a new friend, Lucinia Health, and they are addressing the rising cost of prescription drugs. It's something that gets to me, not only as a physician, but also as worried about my patients, my family, myself. Even with decent insurance, price medications become a concern. Now, here's a way you can get help. Go to your cell phone right now and text this number, 22822. Then type in this message. You're in the message space where you normally type in your text message. Just type in the word Drew, my name, Deary W, and send it. 22822, send to it right now. You'll be happy you did. You'll immediately get an introduction from RefillWise with a prescription saving card that comes right on your phone almost immediately. It happens. I've got one. I did it, and it happened with a blink. Right now, it's free. There's no sign-up process or wait time. You just type that number in, 22822, and type the code Drew in, send it, and you'll immediately receive that RefillWise prescription saving card. And you just show it to your pharmacist when you go to get your medication refill, and you can see how much you save. Whether you have insurance or not, you show it to them, and they'll give you the insurance, if that's what is the least cost, or the savings from the Lucinia card. RefillWise, it works with major pharmaceutical companies to establish discounts on the cash price of over 6,000 commonly prescribed medication. More than 1 million people are using the card. The average saving is 40%, some up to 80%. So if you have medication that's covered by insurance, check with RefillWise pricing at your pharmacy. Even if you have insurance, the RefillWise discount might actually be better. So always pays to check it out. I'm also very excited to say that for every new user, that's right, when you go text my name through that 22822, RefillWise will immediately donate $1 to the Prostate Cancer Foundation. This is a charity I'm involved with. Check them out at pcf.org. They fund creative research for cancer, particularly prostate cancer, but all kinds of cancers get benefit from the unbelievably creative research they're funding. To learn more about RefillWise and to see if your medication could be covered, visit RefillWise, W-I-S-E, RefillWise.com. But to start saving right now, just text Drew, D-R-W, to the number 22822. Message and data rates may apply. And we are back.
We're back. Again. Is the National Assessment Foundation still a sponsor?
Please mention them anyway. Oh, yeah. I think they're great.
Are they?
Well, it doesn't matter. Talk about it.
Okay, National Assessment Foundation is the thing that I've become associated with, tries to get people treatment whether they have good insurance or not.
Yeah, this is something worth getting behind, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
68 people, indigents, got treatment from the first quarter of 2017. 68 homeless people.
Yeah.
You know, and also people with good insurance.
Okay.
You know, I'm not going to.
Well, we can't. Yeah, we
I can't.
Just go
I got to pay for my children's college.
No, somebody's got to pay for something.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, if you have a loved one or you need help, call 888-494-9186. And I think you can find it on our websites.
So, National Assessment Foundation.
Yeah.
So, you know, as we've all sort of navigated through our careers here, what are you thinking about where we're at and what's happening and what needs to be done, other than our lack of resources, which is chronic.
One of the things that, of course, we were approaching is the medical medicine management treatment, which now insurance companies, and I'm not joking, so just hang on to your hat.
Yeah.
They are not allowing us to treat them without an anti-craving medicine.
Anti-craving.
They're not going to let us treat them without
them. Does it have to be Suboxone, or can you use
Vivitrol?
No, they're big on Vivitrol. That's fine.
Now Trexone. Okay,
is it though? No, listen.
Is it?
No harm, no foul.
I don't know though, because I've noticed that there's this sensitivity happening when these guys are on naltrexone.
Sensitivity.
They're defensive?
Their sensitivity to when they come off of it. They have really massive cravings. It's like a rebound craving.
Oh, well,
that's
really?
Just BS. They're just doing that themselves.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Is it BS?
Well, it's either, I don't know. I've not seen that data. That makes some sense to me. I wonder if it's just what would have been there if you weren't on the naltrexone. But I trust your clinical instinct.
It's
that
just
it's something
my
excessive.
Instinct
yeah.
about it is that when people go on the anti-craving,
because they won't pay for it.
It's kind of expensive. Yeah.
Well, they're denying Vivitrol at almost all level insurance. So we're having to just.
Well, what do they want them to be on?
Oral naltrexone.
Oh. Jeez, that's old. That's old school.
Every day, that's
we used to
generic.
Do that
20 years ago. Yeah. They put me on.
That's
it.
Yeah. Generic, right?
Yes.
Yeah, but it never showed that much utility orally.
Exactly. Why but, not?
All right. I think, well, then let
I
them
think,
do it.
Okay. So the implants now. The
yeah, the implants. I'm big on. I like those.
Yeah.
So now there's a study at UCLA that they're doing Suboxone implants.
Yeah. And, but they have naltrexone implants too.
And they have naltrexone implants.
Kaiser pays for naltrexone implants.
Okay. Kaiser. Good. Good.
I could sign off on that, no problem.
I've seen it work.
Yeah, I know.
I'm not saying I've seen it work.
No, I've seen it.
Renee did it.
No, I know. I mean, I think it's an incredible advance in our industry.
In fact, there was one study that showed naltrexone and sertraline as a particularly good combination.
Maybe you could explain to some of the parents at home, Drew.
I like this.
The difference between naltrexone. Yeah. And Suboxone, because a lot of parents think it's the same thing.
Yeah, it's not the same thing.
Yeah.
One has essentially OxyContin in it, and the other does not. It's very simple.
So, yeah, and that parents are getting confused by that, and I think doctors are purposely misleading.
Absolutely.
Parents.
They purposely mislead the client.
What do you think of that?
What do they say? Maybe
they tell they're on, it's naltrexone. Or they're
yeah, but
just
maybe
not,
they don't bring up the fact that it's an opioid.
I don't think they really understand it.
Oh, okay. My God, then they shouldn't prescribe it.
I don't think. I don't think
if
they
I can
really,
understand it.
They get that it's an opioid partial agonist, but they don't. I'm telling you, the way it's being sold, Bob wants to do this whole thing about evil drug companies. I'm telling you, the Suboxone manufacturer that's it. That's evil drug company.
I know, right?
Yes.
Collusion with doctors.
They've gotten into the government, they've gotten into the insurance minds, they've gotten into the physicians and the academics, and everybody has signed off on it.
It's very, very confusing now because now the doctors that used to be only naltrexone, only Vivitrol, which were the non-narcotic. Now they're starting to push us to do Suboxone implants and Suboxone maintenance. And I'm looking at these guys, and I'm sorry, guys, and I know that I'm going to get a lot of negative feedback from this, but these guys are high. They might not feel high because they have low euphoria, but they're high.
The patients. The
patients
are high.
High.
They're high and they can't do the work and they don't flourish ever. They're chronically ill now. But here's the problem. The reality is that the data, if you go a couple years out.
They're going to die if they're not on it.
Right. It looks really good.
It does look really good.
But when you get them off it.
No one
studies that.
No one's doing it.
No
right?
one even gets the data. Yeah. And you and I get the patients then.
Yeah, but let's be play devil's advocate.
That's
if you can get somebody who's 22 years old who could die at any second because they're so stupid and careless with their drug use.
Yep.
And you put them on Suboxone and kept them on that till they were 28.
Yep. Maybe.
When you got them off at 28, they might have way better insight, less
that's
dangerous
true. And people
user.
Would argue that you could do some CBT in the meantime, and you could sort of, get them back some
life skills
and all that stuff.
NIDA's video is they're going to work cooking hamburgers at some McDonald's. Like, that's never going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, the standards.
Did you remember the HBO special?
No.
The best example they could find of a Suboxone success was this kid who worked at a hamburger joint.
Yeah.
But they don't have very high hopes for opioid addicts. They
That's the point. The idea is that we are dangerous people because people will die if we try to do an abstinence program, and that the opioid addiction is just the people that are opioid addicts are just have chronic terminal illness.
That's just how it is.
That's just they're not going to do better than what we can do. This is the best we can expect to do.
Side note.
And they're not way off, right?
No, they're not way off.
It's just not. It's the excessive application of the same treatment over and over again is what I'm taking issue with. And the fact that they have no experience with abstinence now. They don't even know how to do it.
No. And so, it isn't expected.
And I don't mean the patient. I mean the clinician.
Just a side note.
Absolutely.
To educate the prescribers about the deadly combination of benzos and Suboxone.
That's finally starting to get out there.
Okay.
Finally. But not in a – you're still going to see tons of it, but it's starting – people are now going, oh, look at this. The benzo prescribing epidemic has mirrored precisely the opioid epidemic. And then I see in the American Society of Addiction Medicine journals, oh, my God, funny thing. Opioid addicts have sleep disturbances, and they seem to be giving them sleeping medication like Klonopin and all these long-acting hypnotics, the Z medicines.
Of course.
And it's insanity. It's insanity. They're all going to die. They're all going to die. Because they have a sleep disturbance for a drug they shouldn't be on in the first place.
Of course.
That so. One of the main symptoms of that of drug use is sleep.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So let me ask you one other thing. I watch Teen Moms a lot nowadays.
Why?
I didn't even know you were on that show so much.
What?
Why did you? I'm doing an interview with Butch. You should be here.
Oh, okay.
Doing an interview with Butch in like 20 minutes.
Anyways.
Because he's back in prison. He relapsed.
Okay. Well, that's what I wanted to say. Seems like a lot of the teen moms and their boyfriends and their new boyfriends and stuff.
Pot.
Seems like they're on something.
Pot. Well, they're on antidepressants and pot. Well, it's a couple of them are really...
Suboxone? I suspect it's Suboxone.
Maybe.
I don't know why.
We can talk about who. And a lot of their treatment does
There's
not go on.
There's a sedated yet non-euphoric feel about the whole thing.
The whole cast.
Well, which season are you talking about?
Well, we don't want to tolerate feelings. We don't want to tolerate feelings.
Ordinary misery is something that Americans want nothing
it.
To do with
can't
anymore.
Can't tolerate it. Bad feeling? Nope, get rid of
ordinary
it.
Ordinary miseries. But ordinary misery is something that we all experience. How's your ordinary misery in your life?
It's up and down, you know? It's up and down, just like it's supposed to be. You know, I have a teenager because she's 16 and she's a teenager.
What color is her hair right now?
It's natural.
Oh,
natural,
is it really?
Yes. Well, that's what happens when you let your 12 and 11 year old have purple hair and blue hair and green hair. By the time they're 16, they don't want it anymore. so that's a Shelly parenting tip for all you moms at home.
Don't fight it. Just let them do it.
Let them wear whatever they want. Let them do whatever they want. They grow out of it.
When
it's
she
hilarious.
Was working at PRC, there was all these different pictures, and there's
purple,
Ivy,
green,
and there's different color
yeah,
hair.
I remember
blue and green. Yeah. Now she just has normal hair.
Oh my
God. She's 16. It's very interesting when your children like begin to just separate from you. You know, and just like go off from you. It's just odd.
Yeah.
It's just a weird feeling.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of loss kind of.
But it's necessary.
Yeah,
slash,
you got to do
slash
it.
Slash also it, inspiring.
But
like,
I
nice.
Have to, you know, I have to let her do that. But it's just, you know, it's something like, oh, you start to really miss that little kid. Like when I look at her, I'm where did the little... Yeah. That little enchanted thing happened.
You get
like,
over that.
She starts. To,
no, you don't. You can just keep doing it.
Oh yeah, I just have more babies, right?
Yeah, but you and your mom had an interesting relationship. You never really talked about that.
Yeah, we did. We had an
Last
interesting.
Time?
We had no. a horrible, horrible time when I was a teenager. But we realized what went wrong.
Religion.
Well, for me, yeah, that went terribly wrong. But really, the issue was is that my
she
mom
remained
had
with
really
the religion.
High expectations of teens. And I realized how you cannot have these gigantic expectations of teens because they just aren't there. Like, my daughter's brain has gone to sleep, you know? She doesn't remember to, you know, clean her room. Like, my mom was just personalizing all of my, like, you know, misadventures. It wasn't really personal towards her, but she personalized it all. So she got really angry when my brain was asleep, which I understand. But at the same time, it's just what happens to the teenage, you know, the teenage syndrome.
And she actually started abusing you a little bit, right?
That was I left at 17, so we had to separate.
Something must have happened right then because kids don't leave unless something's happening.
Well, yes, there was some significant problems between us.
Though,
yeah,
somehow.
My mom was a born again Christian, of course. She didn't really appreciate. I mean, I got kicked out of church because I was
hungover,
and I was throwing up in the church bathroom, and I had gone to an ex concert, and I was a little hungover, and then I throw up all over the car, and then my mom gets upset, obviously.
But I remember when you were sober and dealing with everything, you start teasing her about how she hit you and how you used to.
We started laughing about it. But then we had this great conversation.
Used to play the I thought that was such an interesting thing because it flipped being a victim on its ear.
Yes, that was one thing I had to take care of in my recovery.
Well, tell me about
being
that.
A victim.
Well, tell me about that.
Not me going up against. my childhood, which had a lot of meandering, covert abuse and overt, obviously, abuse, I had to turn that around in such a way that I was able to first accept it, second, heal from it, third, then say it's okay and forgive that.
And the forgiveness is the hardest part.
That takes a while.
Yeah, but I'm still thinking about
that. Yeah, I'm still thinking about the forgiveness.
Because you have to see that's that person's liability doing the best they can. It wasn't you. It was that person.
But I just came to the forgiveness. It just came.
But you used humor too, which I thought was interesting.
Well, you know, you have your defense mechanisms.
No,
some
no,
are
I don't think it was defense. I thought it was effective. That's why
it was
my
effective. Yeah. It was effective. Yeah, but you know, we still have conversations. You know, we just had one where you know she apologized again. Like she takes ownership for this.
Maybe that's what helps you with forgiveness. Because I got no apologies.
Yeah. Right, but this is crucial because I'm able to say it's okay, and she's able to say she's sorry, and that
would
we
you be
were
able,
doing the best we could.
How important is that?
Would
no,
you be able
it's
to accept
not a joke.
It? Would you be able to accept the apology?
Yes,
I've you
been
would.
Wanting
I wouldn't even
for
be like, I
have
nothing to do with it.
Really?
I wouldn't even know what.
Yeah, that, I mean,
because,
just,
because it's so contrary to the way things are that it'd be like,
I've
what
been,
does that mean?
Because I made the amends to Nancy. You met Nancy. Yes. I made the amends to her. I took care of her. I did a lot of things. And I was figuring one day a Bobby I'm sorry was coming. Mm-hmm. And different times throughout like the 10-year period, she would want to sit down or she had to speak to me when she had got cancer. She came out here to stay with me. And she always wants to sit down and be very serious and have a really important conversation. I always thought, this is it. This is it.
Here it comes.
And it was always about something
about
else.
About her.
Well, and this is where I think that my mom's, you know, religious experiences have paid off for her, is that over the years she has softened. Over the years she has seen and grown compassion and experience.
And to be fair, it's a mutual,
you know,
thing
love.
You have too. And so
yes.
It allowed her to grow and stuff.
Also, she's taking care of my very, very sick grandmother, which has also challenged her with compassion and empathy. And I think that all of those things, those challenges, you know, she's really gotten a bit more realistic about, you know, what her limitations have been in her life and how they've manifested in her behavior. I think that she can see these things now. And so it's I've done a lot of modeling with my family of having a lot of boundaries but not having walls. You know, the difference between the boundary and the wall. I've been very loving, but I also don't take anybody's shit.
Also, there you also have a fully alive teenage daughter, and she was a teenager long before the age 13, you know, probably around 11 or 12, right?
Mm-hmm.
So your mom can see now. Okay, now Shelley knows what I'm talking about.
Right, that's true. That's true. That's another vindicating.
It's another
feature.
Kind of healing.
Yeah.
I think it's healing.
I agree with you. Vindicating, I think. But let's wrap up by talking about where's this world going? It's the three
These
of us.
Kids need to learn how to take showers and get
the
a job.
three of us have been through many, many battles and wars together. We've like been in the trenches together.
I think treatment's going to change dramatically.
But I mean, I want to talk more globally. Like, where are we as a country, as a people, what is going on? What do we think is at issue here? Because we get our own little window into all this, right? Because the work we do and the way we're trained and what we're thinking about things.
Well, the unique perspective is we get
to meet.
I have
to read Bob on Facebook, and I think the fucking world's coming to an end. But I don't really believe that.
He doesn't get. I don't believe half the shit I post. It's just to stir up trouble. You know
me. I know that. Yeah, that's why I don't spend that much time with you.
It's the way the internet works. So,
I'm kind of off Facebook right this second because
sure.
I'm a little frightened.
Well, I wanted you to talk to some of our close old buddies. They see it as the end of the world.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it's the end of the world.
Of I don't either.
It's not the end of the world.
All right, so we don't think it's the catastrophe. We just think it's kind of a weird, scary time.
I think the stewards of young people thought need to take responsibility for being the stewards. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Who
I
would
think
that be?
Some people in the community seem rather responsible. This kid Chance the Rapper, he seems very level-headed and not reactionary.
So they need
leaders that are attuned to the responsibility that it is to lead.
Mm.
Because there's a lot of fame and branding of just like, oh, it's not my responsibility.
And what would their messages be? What would a leader look like? What would they be telling?
Well, I think the way millennials are going, it's a very compassionate, generation that doesn't see race or religion.
I thought the message should be no one gives a shit. You need to give a shit
about
your life.
That and about your peers and about your community.
They do
and
that. I think they already
Trump,
do that.
No, I think Trump really fucking activated it in all of them.
I'm here to tell you they were already that way. They were. Your son, I'm sure, was that way.
Yeah, but they have no power to do anything
right.
about it.
That's right.
Right?
That's
now true. I think they're going to figure out how to get power to do something.
They seem to be flailing. I don't see where they're actually doing. They're certainly here's how they would get. They would have to get a law degree, run for office. Get in there and do it. I know, but that's the governor. Not what they're doing. They're flailing and saying, "I'm not happy. I'm not happy." And that's the wrong. Am I, Shelley? Am I wrong?
Everybody has a lot of opinions, but the hard work is to make change.
Yes.
And hard work to make change personally, the hard work to make change globally. It's the same difficult change that we have to make. We have to look at ourselves.
We have to
look at ourselves, and then we have to make changes. And we all have to do it. And that's what's the hardest thing to do, is to have insight and have judgment and gain the ability to understand what is good for more than just me. Mm. What is best for the
whole. So is that why you've left Facebook? Is because you're tired of trying to convince our peers of those ideas? Because I am too. That's why I say
It drags me down. I don't need to be dragged down in my life. I work with very sick people, and I have to stay very positive in my personal life, because if I don't do that, then it's just a big cycle of bad news and negativity and bad news, and then I watch the news, and then it's like this shooting, that shooting, and my brain just can't catch up and get recentered. If I'm constantly looking at a Facebook, I'm constantly looking at this person's problems with this and that. You know, I have to stay positive.
It's Voltaire. Cultivate your garden.
It's
necessary
my garden.
To cultivate your own garden.
And stay, then just one person at a time.
Take care of yourself. Take care of your family. Take care of your
It starts
community.
With that right. self-care, I think. And I think that I can remain compassionate and empathetic if I take care of myself. Mm-hmm. But if I get out into all of that opinion and public controversy, I just lose the ability to feel compassionate. It makes me very
Do you think
you
when
know,
we were kids
angry.
That the leaders that we looked up to, John Nixon being great examples, mm-hmm. were level-headed and logical and taught us the truth? Because I do believe they did.
Who?
I do.
John Nexene, very politically active, but not radicals. Yeah, yeah. They taught you, teach young people, learn from culture and from the icons in a culture. And right now, there are none. It's all just about brand and money and fame.
Well, it's a lot
and all
of
that.
Money. It's a lot about money.
The word is starting to make them.
That's what
I'm
hoping
too.
Is going to come back. Yeah. People like Joe Strummer, like mm-hmm. John Nexene, to be people you can like. Okay, they're going to tell me about ideas, and they're not going to tell it in some radical, superimposed. People have to go to the bathroom in this space type ideas,
I do believe there are ways.
I think it was a very changing culture. It was a very changing time. I think that people coming out of the 70s into, late 70s, early 80s, I think that they were really kind of recovering from, a lot of stuff politically at that same time as well.
That's right.
I mean, there was that huge. I mean, I feel it. I feel like in the air, I feel like it's very 60s.
I learned about caring about people from a band called The Clash.
Yeah. But listen, Shelley, it's possible. You said you should be taking care of others, but it's possible to find things that win for everybody. Find solutions that win for you and people you care about, and empathy for others. And in other words, it doesn't have to be you or the others.
That's
the mistake people are making. It's like, if I make a choice that is good for me, it doesn't have to be bad for somebody else.
A little short on the that's you're getting there if you can start to make choices, good choices for yourself. The secondary gain there is that I can make choices that are good for the whole.
Yeah, they're called win-win. Everybody.
Yes,
win.
Everybody.
It's possible. You have
but
to be
it's
care-
hard.
You have to pay attention.
I don't get to gratify.
Oh yeah, well that's
okay.
That.
I don't
yeah,
get to gratify
it.
Right
because
now.
Because ordinary misery is good.
And it's
here's
teaching.
A book I'm reading called The Fourth Turning. It's called American Prophecy. This guy wrote this book in 1998 and predicted what's happening right now. And I'm getting into what's coming next. So I'll report when I know.
Oh well, that'll be good.
Where is he headed?
Like a crystal ball.
It sounds like there's going to, around 2025, is going to be some sort of something. I don't
know right. What. Well, if people still want treatment,
they can go to Bel Air.
If they still want treatment,
but he's
after
very optimistic. He's still very optimistic. Very, very optimistic. Very, but still saying there's going to be like an upheaval of some type. So, all right. So listen, Shelley,
yes.
Where shall people go to see you or visit you? Or?
Well, they can call us at 1-800-665-GROW.
Grow 665
yes.
Grow
yes and grow. We can do a
national
assessment
referring to them
yeah
too.
Yeah
so National Assessment
well, Paul,
Foundation will...
Paul her partner is working with me in another
okay
thing.
So all right so
we're working all around, you know, we're still trying to promote people's health and well-being and whether they want it or not.
Do you feel good about it?
I feel tired about it
well,
sometimes,
of course.
But I do feel good about it.
You know what's amazing? I've been there. Let me talk about it because she's not going to tell it accurately. I've never seen what they can do with young people. They can get them to stand single file and wait for their van.
So they're doing a good job.
They're
doing
an excellent job.
Okay, good. So that you're
structurally, yeah.
Structurally.
No, listen.
That's a miracle.
You
That's
remember,
a fucking
Shelley,
miracle.
Shelley, we get to see what else is going on out there. You know what I'm saying?
And compared yeah, I'm a little
to
isolated.
Else,
yeah,
compared
say.
To what else is going on,
a little isolated.
Congratulations. Yeah. You're doing a good job. It's tough work. Keep doing it. Bob,
thank you.
I'll see you all next
thank
time.
Thank you. Love you guys. Thanks.
These walls are tall. I don't wanna know what they say. If I didn't fall on eggshells, would you know my name? I was your freedom. I could have set you free.
I don't think of you at all.